a week or so ago, I got to do a talk out at Mount Baker Presbyterian, a small church that I pastor. And I got to talk about the birth of my son, Fox. For those who don't know, it was pretty traumatic. And it left me in a very empty, dark, isolated place for a good month and a half. And when I did that, I really felt like God said, you need to come here and share this message also. Because even though I was in the middle of that trauma and what was going on with me, we all have things that keep us away from God. This barrier that's always in between us. So 2 months ago, Fox was born. A little bit of the backstory is we knew that there was pregnancy issues from the start. My wife Danielle had placenta previa, which is a condition where the placenta grows over the hole of the cervix and the baby cannot come naturally. We had the same thing with our previous daughter, Quinn. And Quinn's birth was traumatic also. So after Quinn's birth, Danielle almost died. She almost bled out. We happened to be at Swedish. It was a really good thing. This nurse comes up to us and everything's going crazy and says, don't worry about a thing. Jesus is in the house. She didn't know we were believers or anything like that. So that kind of really set the tone for being at Swedish at that time. So 2 months ago, yesterday, I woke up at about 7:30 in the morning with Danielle going, we need to go to the hospital. And I sit up and I'm like, okay, and our bedroom is right here, and we have a bathroom that connects our two bedrooms. And I sat up and I said, why? And she goes, I'm bleeding. And I stand up and there's blood everywhere. And I just said, okay. I mean, what do you say at that point other than, okay? I get up and I start throwing clothes on. I got piled clothes on the guy, so all my clothes just go right there at the bed. And then I climb in that night, right? So I'm good. You know, I'm putting on my cleanest, dirty stuff, and I throw it on, and I look at Quinn, who's sleeping in the bed, and I look at Danielle, and she's cleaning up the blood, and I'm like, heck with the blood, we'll worry about that later. Okay. I see some flip-flops, and I'm like, oh, I need to put those on. And then something says, no, don't wear flip-flops today. I said, okay. There's a lot of okays here, because I really didn't know what I was doing. I got up and I woke Quinn up, and Danielle, bless her, she wakes Asher up, gets him dressed, we get him both dressed, and we get him in the van, and it's like, we start driving, and we've been going to Swedish for everything, because we don't trust the hospital here. We've had nothing but horrible experiences when it comes to childbirth at this hospital. You tell them that you're in recovery, and they look at you, and they go, do we need to drug test the baby? It's like, do you understand what recovery is? Obviously not if you're asking that question, but if you want a drug test, just have fun. So we start driving, and we're driving, and like, we're just like, should we go, should we try to make Providence in Everett? Should we try to make Swedish? But there's a funny thing with the way blood works is when it's bright red, it means it's happening now. When it's dark color, it means it's kind of coming together and constricting and coagulating, right? Well, everything with Daniel was a bright red blood. We're driving, and she goes, I think we should go to Skagit. And I said, okay. She goes, do you think I should call him? I said, yeah, might as well. So she calls him and says, hey, I've been seeing it Swedish my whole pregnancy for a placenta previa. They told me to go to the closest hospital if I started bleeding, and I'm bleeding, and I'm on my way to you. So by the time they got there, somebody for once at that hospital didn't have their head somewhere else. And I dropped her off at the front door, and I went parked. By the time I got upstairs, she had already been seen by a nurse and started to triage, was undressing and getting ready, and she was still bleeding. So here we are in this hospital room, this tiny little hospital room, and got Ashton and Quinn, and they are just being absolutely amazing kids because they know something crazy is going on with mom. They know something crazy is going on with baby Fox. And they know dad's worried. So when we had bleeding instances with Quinn, I'd be driving down the road, and the first thing I do is I'm on my cell phone and I'm texting people, and she'd be like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm texting, we need prayer. I that this time. I didn't do anything this time. I froze. Because we had a plan. We had a plan. We were going to go deliver at Swedish. Everything was going to be fine. There was going to be none of this. They're just going to send us home. And this was our plan. But our plans are sometimes not the best plans. What we have planned out doesn't always work out, right? And she said something to me. Danielle said something to me on the way to the hospital that she said on the way to Swedish. And she said, I wonder if God has us going to this hospital for a reason. I'm going, it's Gadget. Why would he want us to go there? I mean, seriously. And as we're sitting there in this room and everything's getting crazy, they bring in this doctor and he's got very broken English and he speaks, he's Russian or something, and I couldn't understand him. And he said, we're going to get to the bottom of this. Right now your baby looks okay, but we're going to do an ultrasound and this and that and that and this. And they get an ultrasound right away. We finally get a hold of our father-in-law and he comes and he picks up Asher and Quinn, and I just kind of go to the window and point to where our van is. Like, it's over there. I'm like, don't worry, we'll be over in a couple of hours because this is all going to blow over, because that's what my plan was, right? And so as I come back into the hospital room, they're sitting there and they're doing the ultrasound and the baby looks good. Everything looks good. Everything looks okay. But they started seeing some stuff on the ultrasound that wasn't okay. After they do the ultrasound, about 5 minutes later, the doctor comes back in and says, kind of does one of these. He comes in and he leans up against the wall and he goes, you know, for a person to lose so much blood, it's not that big of a deal. But when the baby loses that much blood, the baby doesn't have any blood.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, alarm bells are starting to go off. And I'm like, okay, time to go to Swedish. Screw this place. And that was my plan. As he started telling us the story, he goes, I think we need to take the baby right now. We're like, wait, well, you're just going to have to transport him. You know, you can't keep babies at 35 weeks, 5 weeks or 8. You know, and he goes, no, the nurses are all, we can keep like 33, 34 and up, something like that. And it's like, okay, well, this is the only time that I really like got in this entire time was I just went, okay, I trust you. I have absolutely no control in this situation whatsoever, and I have to trust you, and I don't like it. I absolutely hate it, but I have to trust you, and I'm going to. Has anybody ever been in a situation like that?
Yeah.
Sucks. I said, how long till surgery? And he goes, oh, we're setting everything up right now. I'm like, but there's a problem. And he goes, what? And I said, I need my pastor here to pray for us beforehand. And that's when this doctor looks at me and goes, get your pastor here, because I am of faith too, and I'm only here to serve him.
Praise God.
But I'm like, that's not my plan. And I was too blind to see what God was really doing in the middle of all of this. I got in my own way of my relationship with God. That's not my plan. I had this planned out to do it some completely different other way. That's not my plan. No. So I call Mike and I tell him what's going on. I'm like, dude, they're going to take the baby. And he goes, I'll be right there. And he gets there and he's like, what's going on? And as he's getting there and he's talking, we're telling him, you know, nurses are getting Danielle ready. And I think he even helped me get dressed. I don't remember because I had to put this stuff on. The operating room stuff, right? And I'm scared. I know Danielle's scared. You know, it's just crazy. And they take her back, and they take her back into the room, and then they get me into the nursery, and I'm sitting there, and in my white jumpsuit and my booty slippers and my hairnet, and you know, I'm sitting there. And I'm waiting, and all of a sudden I just see this burst of activity in the nursery. to like six nurses in there opening and unwrapping everything. I'm like, I hope this is for the kids that are in here already. Or maybe somebody else is giving birth. And this doctor, this little doctor, comes up to me and goes, "Hey, I'm so-and-so with Children's Hospital." I'm like, "Why are you here?" "I'm so-and-so with Children's Hospital. There's doctors from Children's Hospital stationed at all these hospitals and the nurseries to help with babies and so on, just for reasons like this. And, you know, we always prepare for the worst, so that's why you see them setting up everything." I'm like, "No, you're just going to deliver my baby because that's my plan, and we don't have to prepare for the worst because my plan says that's not going to happen." There I was getting in the way again. What I should have did was say, "Okay, I trust you, I believe in you, and I trust God to pull us through this." But I didn't do that. I got in the way. So they grab me and they take me into the delivery room. It's just like, okay, you know, and has anybody here had a cesarean or been in the room with a cesarean delivery? Yeah, so, yeah, you know, all I get to see is this blue sheet and my wife's head and her arms like this. And as they're working to open her up and stuff like that, and you cut her open, they bust the sack and you hear, "Clear." And she goes, "That's really good news." I'm like, "Cool." And then I hear this nurse go, "Oh, is it breech?" And I look up at the doctor and he had this look of, "Oh shit," in his eyes. Literally. He goes, "The baby's transverse." I'm like, "I don't know what that means." Well, I guess what that means is when you go to deliver a baby like that, the incision needs to run up and down instead of left to right. So they had the incision going the wrong way for the delivery of the baby. And you see him working and you see him getting ready to cut and the sack's burst and the baby's stuck inside, the baby's not breathing. And you see this doctor reach in and he's like, I mean, the only way I can describe it is like a Thanksgiving turkey. You know, just like up in there trying to flip my son around and there's nothing I can do. Danielle's going, "What's happening? What's happening?" I'm like, "I don't know." But I forgot about God. I forgot about what He was doing. I really, truly believe that if it wasn't for God intervening in all of this, Fox would not be here. Because after they get him pulled out, she had slipped down a little bit so I could see a little bit. They pull him out and he's nothing. They get him over there to where the respiratory specialists and all these people are. And they get him over there and they start wrapping him up and you hear the doctor go, "Start resuscitation." There's just silence. There's nothing. She starts to cry. I start to cry. I'm like, "What in the hell is going on? Where are you, God? Because you're not here right now," is what I was saying inside. But He was. Because in God's plan, He put the right team of people in the right place at the right point in time to make sure that my son lived. But I couldn't see it. I didn't see it. I got mad. I think it's all over there and we get to go home in a couple of days. No. After they finally get Fox resuscitated, they get him all wrapped up and they like, "We need to get him into the nursery on some high flow right away." You can see him for like a second and they bring him over and they got him wrapped up and the doctor's trying to hold the baby, and I said, "No." I took the baby from the doctor, and I put him up to my wife's cheek, and we got to see him for a second. They're like, "Okay, we got to go." And they take him over into the nursery, and I look at Danielle, and I'm like, "I'm sorry, I got to go with the baby." She's like, "Go." I get over there into the nursery, and he's just naked on this table, and they're hooking him up all kinds of stuff, and they do this thing called high flow, and it's like they have different settings where they're blasting oxygen into my son's nose. I guess what happened is he'd been in there for so long that he started drowning on the amniotic fluid, and there was so much fluid in his lungs that he couldn't open them. So like when you breathe, you go, lungs open, out, you know, open, close. Well, he couldn't do that. Remember before I came out here to talk, I just went and watched a video that I took from the hospital. And that is a sound that I hope nobody in this room ever has to hear. He's laying there, and all he can do is grunt. He's got so... You ever like, get the wind knocked out of you? And you can't breathe, and you're just sitting there going... He did that for like 4 or 5 hours straight. Mike came back, and as I'm bouncing back and forth in between Danielle's room and the nursery, and Danielle's room and the nursery, and text messages of like what's going on, and I'm sending pictures of the baby, and it's like the nursery and Danielle's room and the nursery. I forgot to talk to God. It's not his fault, it's my fault. So finally, I go into Danielle's room, and there's a nurse in there, and she happens to be friends of a friend, and I'm talking to her. I'm like, what do I got to do to get Danielle into the nursery with the baby? She's like, well, maybe we can win the bed in there. I was like, let's pop the box. Let's go. She's like, hold on, we need to check this on power. No, let's go. So that's what we did. Pop the locks, wheeled a whole bed and everything into the nursery, and got her in there and smushed everything together close enough to where Danielle could reach out and hold the baby's hand. And we're just asking, like, hey, can mom hold the baby? Oh, no, we don't want to do that. Blah, 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 blah. Well, they were actually doing it wrong at this hospital because there's this really cool thing called kangaroo care. And so what they recommend with premature babies, babies who can't breathe and all of that stuff, is be skin-to-skin contact with the mother. It's called kangaroo care. And they weren't doing anything like that. They were just leaving them splayed out on this thing with all this oxygen pumping into his lung as he's sitting there going, he can't breathe. They finally make the decision to send him to Providence, to the NICU down there. This is kind of where it really gets scary. Because as they call these people, and then they come, and they show up with this like little, you know, you see the normal gurneys, right? And they're like normal bed size, you fit a whole body on there and stuff like that. Well, it's about half that size. It's got like a little incubator thing on it. And the only thing I could tell my son before he left was, at least your first car ride is not only an ambulance, but it's like part spaceship. How cool is this? And as we're sitting there, and I'm holding the baby's hand, and Danielle's holding the baby's hand, and we're talking, and these new people come in, and we're talking, and first thing I ask the nurse is, like, how long have you been doing this? No. She's like, 20 plus years. I'm like, okay, you'll live. Ask the respiratory specialist, how long have you been doing this? She told me some of the number. I'm like, okay, we'll do. I'm looking at the paramedic and the ambulance driver. I'm like, you guys got to go. Because they look brand new. But where was God? Because I couldn't see him. But he was there. He was there in the middle of all of it. I couldn't see him. As they get there, they get them all packed up and they get everything ready to go and put them in this incubator thing. And it's like, I don't know if this is the last time I'm going to see my son or not. So I'm taking pictures, taking videos. I feel like, why am I doing this? They get them all packed up and ready to go, and I look at Danielle and I'm like, I'm going with the baby to the hospital. And she's like, I know. So they start to go, and I give her a kiss and say goodbye. Roger was there. And Lucy came and brought us flowers. Came to tell us that they loved us. Mike was there. He sat with us through a whole huge part. Hours. Of this whole ordeal. It was on Monday. Sat there for hours with us in the nursery. And they loaded my kid into this thing. They got him going. They started going out the back way. And I'm like, I'm just going to follow them out. So I say goodbye to my wife. She can't come. It's what she wants to do. And I go and follow him all the way down through the back door and out the emergency room, and I watch him load my son into this ambulance, and I'm like, is this the last time I'm ever going to see him? God, where are you? Because you're not here. But he was. I just couldn't see it. That's what I was crying out inside. I was like, God, where are you? Because you're not here. I'm dying inside and I need you, and you're not answering. Where are you? Get in my father-in-law's car and I start driving to Everett. And I teach on this a lot. Up here from the front, I say, do this prayer exercise where you guys reply with, I trust you, Jesus. We'll read Psalms. You know, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for I trust you, Jesus. We do this so much, and I'm like, oh man, it's time that I really got to put my money where my mouth is. So I'm on the freeway, and I'm driving to Everett. It's raining. The tears are streaming down my face. I can't see anything. I'm in the slow lane. There's semis passing me, and so there's mist everywhere. And I'm just like, I need to say this. I need to believe this. I really need to say this. And I couldn't. I was screaming inside, God, where are you? Because you're not here. But he heard that cry. God, where are you? Because you're not here. And he said, you know what? Not only am I here, but I'm going to smack you upside the head for not listening to me. I'm driving along and I just get this like little throaty, I trust you, Jesus. There wasn't even that much to it. And then I do it again. And then I'm crying more, and then I do it again, and it's getting louder, and I'm crying more, and I do it again, and it's just like, and I'm yelling it at the windshield. I trust you, Jesus. Because what else could I do in this situation? I had to trust the doctors. I had to trust the ambulance driver. I had to trust the new hospital. I had to trust that my wife, who just had massive surgery, was going to be okay in the hospital all by herself. I had to leave her alone to follow my baby to a hospital where I don't even know if he's going to be able to make it through the night. And I get there and I get to the hospital and I find a place to park and I run in. And has anybody been to the baby place in Everett at Providence? So they got this big old security stand when you walk in, and you're like, I'm like, hi, my son was just transferred from another hospital, Fox Riley, and I really want to get to his room. And he types it in, he's like, there's nobody here by that name. Like, what are you talking about? I just left the hospital at the same time as the ambulance. I was doing 45 on the freeway. There's no way I got here before them. Calls upstairs, and they're like, oh, yeah. You beat the ambulance. He isn't even here yet. I'm like, what? So that was the first time that God answered me, saying that he was here. Because I was able to get through everything and in there and be ready for him by the time that he got there. So when they showed up with him in the little spaceship incubator thing, I was sitting in his hospital room waiting for him. And so often, you run into people that have to helicopter every ounce of treatment with anything that goes on with a loved one, a kid, or whatever. And you can see that with these nurses. And the one comes up and starts talking to me about blood sugars and stuff like that. I said, hey, look, do whatever you need to do to make sure my son lives. I'm not going to handcuff him. Just do it and get it done. And one more thing. I do not do well with bullshit. So if something's wrong, I want to know about it. That night was probably one of the worst nights of my entire life. Because they put him on a CPAP machine to help. You know, people with sleep apnea and stuff like that, they have these funky little masks that they gotta sleep on and a big loud machine. And they put him on that and it runs through water, so it just sounds like somebody's taking a continuous bong hit. Just nonstop. And every time you hear that, it's just like you got to sit up, and it's like you want to run to your kid and do something and mess with all this stuff, but you need to trust the staff to do what they are trained to do, which I have no idea what to do other than get in the way. That was the second time God showed up, and I didn't see it. He sent us to a hospital that knew what to do. They got them all hooked up, and anytime I'd wake up and they do something or other, and they do something with the baby, the first thing I would do is call Danielle. And the next thing that God did, stepped up and did, because I was so afraid of her being there by herself, she had people show up at the hospital to sit with her, bring her food, curry. I hate curry. I hate salad. I hate everything to do with curry. They bring her curry that night because I'm not there. Like, because she loves it. I'm like, okay, cool. That's something I could have never do for you, baby. I'm glad we got friends that can. Right? And just all night long, anytime anything happened, I would text her, I would call her and let her know what was going on with the baby, and she gets a hold of me the next day and goes, I should be out of here by 2 o'clock because I'm not gonna let them keep me here any longer. I need to be with my son. The church that I serve up in Concord is part of a denomination, and they have an executive in this denomination, and I called him on the way to Everett, and because I was just looking for some kind of voice in the night that I could yell at. And he called me and I told him what was going on. This is where God also came through. He called me that night. We talked. 8 o'clock the next morning, he's at the hospital room with Starbucks and danishes and all that good stuff. And he's there praying with me and Fox. Shortly after he leaves, Mike calls. And as Mike said earlier, Daniel and I are on staff, you know, so this is Tuesday, it's staff meeting day. And he calls and he's like, I canceled staff. I'll be down in a little bit. There's God again. A while ago, a year or so ago, I did a sermon on the shield of faith out of Ephesians, and I described that we cannot hold our shield of faith without our community around us. Because the way Paul described the shield of faith, he was describing a Roman soldier, right? Well, back in those days, they fought in what was called the phalanx, which means, so my shield covered the person next to me, right? I can't always lift my shield, you know, to protect myself, so I'm so grateful that I have the people around me that carry their shields to protect me. And that's what God was doing. He was putting other people with their shields of faith all around me and my family, and I didn't see it. I kept going, God, where are you? Because you're not here. And in the middle of all this, I really started reaching out, and I'm like, God, how can you explain what is going on? Where have you been in all of this? You ever get mad at somebody, and you know, it doesn't, what they're doing doesn't even, you know, you're just mad at them and they're doing something and you want to be mad at them for that thing even though they're doing nothing wrong, so you yell at them for the thing that they're doing. That's what I was doing with God. Can somebody read that? Can somebody find that and read it, please? James chapter 1, verses 2 through 18. So as, before we get there, as I'm praying to God and I'm asking him what to do or how to explain this and everything, I happened to come across this passage one day. Do you have it?
Yes. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation and the rich in his humiliation, because like a flower of the grass, he will pass away. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. Its flower falls and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change.
So I just heard myself in a couple of different things in that story. But every good and perfect gift comes from God, right? I can't think of a better, good, and perfect gift.
Sorry
about that, buddy. I cannot think of a good, of a better gift, and perfect gift than this. Because even though I forgot to believe and didn't listen, God still blessed me. Even though, if you really dig into the legality of that chapter where I sinned against God because I didn't believe in him, he still blessed me. Even though at one time me and my family walked through the valley of the shadow of death, God still blessed me. Even though I got in the way of my relationship with God, he still was a good, good father. Jesus, thank you for this wonderful blessing. Even though he gets me up at 3:30 every morning. Thank you for the beautiful addition of this community. Thank you for the courage to tell this story. And I just want to encourage you that if you feel like you are in a place where there's a wall between you and God, seek out one of us staff members. Seek out a friend that's in your circle and ask him to pray with you. Because like I said, sometimes we can't carry our own faith. We can't carry our own shields, and we need those around us to help see us through. I can't do all this alone. I can't do all this without you guys. I couldn't do it without Roger and Lucy coming to see me. I couldn't do it without Mike coming to see me. Andrew, everybody that pitched in. I was at home with the kids, and Danielle was living in the hospital. Had 3 or 4 different faith communities showing up with food. It was amazing. I've never felt so loved and cared for in all my life. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
We can go ahead and stack the chairs. We'll move into our time of communion.
Thank you for listening to the Hold Fast podcast, the ministry of Kevin and Danielle Riley. Find our podcast at holdfastpodcast.org. Find information about Kevin and Danielle's ministry at Tierra Nueva, tierra-nueva.org, and Facebook and Instagram.